I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
That's right.
And Joe Branton.
I never said I hit him.
That's a good one. Very good. Very good. Thanks for joining us this week. Again, we've got our Guitar Nerds crew. How's it all going?
It's going good.
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, charming.
I can't believe it's been 2 weeks since we spoke to Matty.
I know.
His beard.
It's been your birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday.
The big 2-9.
How was Germany, Matt?
I actually went to Amsterdam, so Germany I'm assuming Germany was fine.
I wasn't asking about where you went. I just need a sort of general status update on Germany.
You did go to Germany that one time that you went to see that tiny little town.
What?
That you went to see that tiny town.
Oh, Miniature Wunderland.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually my birthday 3 years ago.
Well, there we go.
That only big
seems
two
like
six.
Seems like...
Actually, I'm far more interested in how your 26th birthday was.
It was pretty good.
Cool.
Good. So, how was Amsterdam?
It was really good. I was so annoyed. On the last day, I walked past a guitar shop just as they closed.
Right.
I was like, and it looked really good. It looked like it had some cool stuff in there. And a friend of ours that used to work with this has moved out there. And I was asking him, obviously, because he's a guitar player, what are the guitar shops like? He's like, there's a really good vintage one somewhere in town. But I never got to find it. I did accidentally also spend €35 on chocolate.
Accidentally?
Accidentally, yeah.
Over the period of 3 days or whatever, or in one hit?
In one go.
Freddo's are absolutely astonishingly expensive.
It's really expensive to import them.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Gold leaf Freddo.
Yeah. So the black market for Freddo's in Amsterdam is...
I'm just going to have one, I don't care.
They actually did a trade. They were like, look, you can keep the coffee shops, but we're banning Freddo's. So people have to smuggle them in. So what does €35 of chocolate actually get you?
It got me 10 of probably the best chocolates I've ever eaten.
10 chocolates, €3.50 a chocolate. Actually, that's not...
It's not that bad.
Completely bananas, is it?
No, I reckon if they're nice
ones. How big were the chocolates?
Like an inch squared. Some of them may be a bit bigger.
Like a little truffle style.
Like the size of a Dragonheart plectrum.
Yeah.
We had to bring back to guitars in some way, yeah, I guess. So how's everyone's week been? Matt, you've obviously been to Amsterdam. Jay Cross, what have you been up to?
I've had two band practices with two different bands.
Blimey.
And I've got another one after this tonight.
Okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, not a third new one, but a second.
How have they been going?
It's been fine. The first one that I had, which is the one that I've got again tonight, was cool. Some great pedals on show, as you'd expect.
Okay.
I would not expect that.
From my mates.
That you're in.
From my mates. I'm playing. I had a couple of practices with your friend of mine, Dan Grace, from the EVH, the infamous Guitar Nerds EVH pedal demo fame.
Yep,
disaster demo.
He's playing his absolutely banging custom shop Tele, which is one of the best Telecasters one of the best guitars I've ever played.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's amazing.
Absolutely, it's, one of that guitar is just.
He plays it in that EVH demo.
Yes, he does. Yeah, which
on
is
the
what
Guitar
got
Nerds
the grief,
channel,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because he played a Tele for an Eddie Van Halen.
Funny enough, you mentioned that guitar, Jay, because I actually found exactly the same guitar for sale second hand.
Oh, really?
For people exactly the same spec. Is his a relic or is it NOS?
It's a relic.
Yeah.
For people
who
aren't aware of what it is, do you want to talk us through the spec, Matt?
It's a no-caster with a 52 neck, if I remember rightly, isn't it? Because it doesn't have the no-caster neck on it.
But that's right, yeah. It's not a no-caster because no-casters... No-casters have got flathead screws, whereas telecasters have got Phillips screws.
Is it something he ordered up custom?
Yeah, it is.
It wasn't something from stock?
No, it was something that he ordered custom.
Man, that must have been so expensive.
I think it was.
It's not that much more expensive.
It's astonishing, you know.
What's the difference? What is the price point difference between taking something stock? Like, if we say
the average stock is
like 2.5.
That's what a new one will be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like,
oh boy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you custom order something, that's all. If you get something off the shelf, that's only the same as you're only paying the same price as the custom order. Except
you're just getting it quicker.
You're getting it quicker. Yeah, and you can try it before you buy it.
So you're playing bass in this band.
I am.
What are you using? What pedals? What amp were you using?
Well, it was just in the practice room, so I was using a SVT into a 6x10, 8x10, 8x10.
Okay.
And I was running...
Which SVT? 7, probably.
Big wooden box or rack-mounted head?
Don't remember.
Okay.
Actually, as it happens, don't remember. In room 3, I think.
Of Brighton Electric.
Yeah. You'd know.
It's an SVT 450.
There we go.
They don't have any sevens, so yeah.
Right. I was using my Sans amp as the preamp, the BB1X as a drive pedal, which I just left on. And I also took but didn't use my harmonic percolator.
I can't believe you don't use that. See, I wouldn't be using the Sans amp or the Boss if I had a harmonic percolator.
Really? You just use that?
I think I'd just have that.
Really? Okay.
I would love that. It's just a preamp.
Mm. Well, I'll give that a go. I'll give that a go.
Third Eye Pedals in Brighton do a copycat.
I think that's going to be, alongside the Dumble, I think the harmonic percolator is going to be the new mass cloned.
Yeah, maybe. I'm definitely going to get one. It's just the thing that Third Eye do it on rotary controls.
Yeah, which makes a lot more sense.
It does, but I just love
the sliders
on the proper one.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I mean, it's wicked. But it is a bit of a noise that you can't. There's no power supply input.
Oh really?
No.
You have to run it off the battery.
Well, yes, but what I've done is I've got a converter. So
I think, Joe, if you're actually after one, there's a company called Frederick Effects, which I think are based in the UK.
Mm. They are. And I believe one of the guys behind it, I think, is in the Facebook group.
He is, because
I've got a feeling, I'm not 100%, I mean, he'll probably correct me if he's listening to this, that I think he had something to do with the original, or he knew the guy who built the originals.
He's got an original.
Yeah, and his one is basically a circuit copy.
It's does like he make exactly his with sliders, thing. Do you know?
No, it's with two knobs.
Just like this podcast. indeed.
But the most important part about this band is the aforementioned Dan, who's using his amazing telly. Is using both a El Capistan and an RE20. The reason being, he used to use an RE20, sold it because he was like, nah, El Capistan sounds better. And then after about 6 months went, you know what, it doesn't. The RE20 sounds better. So he got another RE20 and uses that most of the time and then uses the El Capistan some of the time.
So basically, you've got in his ear in the pub and go on.
No. I was actually completely surprised when he turned up and he had both, and that's why. But the other guitarist is using a Bigfoot King Fuzz.
Okay.
And I actually went out with Reese over the weekend from
this is Reese from
Fuzz,
Bigfoot.
From Bigfoot, sorry. And we had a little talk about what he's got coming up.
It's about time some new stuff came out, really. It must be he does 4 pedals, and one of them you have to use with another pedal to make it work.
Yeah.
It must be, a couple of years since he's done a new pedal?
What was the last one? I guess it was the Trouble Booster.
Yeah.
Yep. So there's a new one, and it's a tremolo.
Okay, are you allowed to talk about
it? I am allowed to talk about it.
Are you sure?
100%. I asked him.
Have we got a name yet? Because the names are all pretty good, aren't they?
There is a name, and I can't remember what it is. It's called The Rumble.
Okay.
It's called The Rumble, and the picture is a rhino.
Okay.
And he said he's done the same as what he's done on, you know how he does that big amp, little amp switching thing? He's done that. The little amp is meant to be like a tremolo from a... from a Princeton, I think he said. And then the big amp is from a Super Reverb.
Okay.
And he said, I didn't quite understand the technical side of what it was. He did explain to me how it worked. He said something along the lines of how amp tremolos are optical.
Yep.
And it's... Oh, now, what did he say? He said it's like it's difficult to replicate that when you're doing a pedal, and he's found a way to make it sound a lot more authentic, he reckons.
Cool.
So,
yeah, because that's the thing, isn't it? Is that on a Princeton, it's labelled vibrato.
Yeah.
And it is actually tremolo because it's a dip in volume.
Yes.
But the actual, those old amp ones, it is physically pulling power from the valves to reduce the output and then pushing it back.
That's right, yeah. And
so, I don't know how you'd replicate it on a pedal.
He reckons he's done something and he says it sounds amazing. But yes, so that is, that'll be out soonish, I hope.
Nice, I'm sure we'll get a first demo dibs.
I hope so. But it sounded wicked and he seemed really excited about it.
Cool.
And if you've seen any videos of Reese, he doesn't tend to get excited very often.
He was animated about his tremolo.
Yeah.
He was a bit up and down, you could say.
Yeah. That's that.
Joe Branton, you've been getting very excited about a particular bass this week.
Oh, good Lord. Yes.
Tell us about it.
So, when perusing the... Actually, I think it was... I said perusing the internet, but it wasn't. It was sent to me by Joe Puttick, a fellow that I work with. A custom shop 59 precision bass with a 55 neck pickup, or
telly bass style pickup.
So the single coil rather than the humbucking precision bass pickup on a relict shell pink body.
Nice.
With a gold anodized plate.
When are you buying this?
Oh, I really wanted to. Now it falls on the more expensive area end of custom shops. It's like £2,700. So
okay.
it's a chunk of money. But I popped it up on the group. I found it on Toman, and also on that website they have the same thing, but with a Rosewood 60s neck in. Aged Olympic white with a torque guard and the 55 pickup for £2,100. You save a lot of money by not having shell pink and gold anodized.
You could also order this though.
I could
order one.
And I could.
I'm sure it would work out but more financially beneficial for you.
Probably. But after I shared it and pointed out how amazing it was, I got an email from the Fender purchaser at the guitar shop I work at.
Yep.
And he was like, oh, I didn't realise you'd be that into these. I actually was given an option on a few of these, including Purple Flake.
Oh, what are you talking about? That sounds amazing.
I know. And he was like, I can get you some prices if you want.
Did you get those prices?
No, I told him no. No, because I don't have the money for it right now, and I don't want to build myself up to this and then not be able to get it. So we'll see.
You could get, what's that rubbish fake Fender company that you always talk about?
No, what, Sire?
No, the other one. The one that does like custom relics and stuff.
Oh, they're not Limelight.
Yeah, you could get one of them to build. You could get them to build it for, a grand or something?
Yeah, they do them for about a grand. Yeah, I like the Limelight stuff, but I do think I have come around to the fact that, yes, if I was going to spend a grand on a Limelight, I should spend £2,000 on a Fender.
Yes, completely. Yeah. I'm glad you've finally seen the light.
Nice
that
you've caught up with us.
All right, I know. And it's the worst reason to not buy something, but purely on resale value, I think.
I guess
you're right. It's not a bad thing, because we are the sort of people that buy and sell lots of gear. We tend to not buy one thing that we stick with forever. So because we buy and sell lots of gear, what we buy always has to be sellable. So yes, that makes perfect sense, and it's why I will get a Fender custom shop. Although I'm really, really tempted to just get a Sire still.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so you put something up on the site, or you did some writing for the site this week about Sire bases. And I've kind of come around to the idea.
The dawn of Sire.
I'm going to get in touch with them and see whether we can, maybe get one to have a look at, maybe do a demo of.
Because they haven't really made an inroad over here at all. The only shop you can get them from is Toman over here. And actually, they're loads cheaper in America than they are, because Toman have got a markup on them. And Sire are selling them directly in the States.
Yes.
They don't use shops. And that's actually part of their whole thing. Part of their whole ethic is that they cut out shops, you buy them directly from them, they give you really high quality instruments at a really low price.
Maybe you're their way into the UK.
Maybe.
Maybe you could be their man.
I mean, that's what Gordon Smith do.
Yeah, I know.
Go direct.
They just
which is why you can get a custom shop, yeah, Les Paul Junior for $799.
Absolutely. The only problem with it is there's only so big a company like that can get. You know, there's only so big that it's why, despite the fact that Gordon Smith make and have for the last, 20 years or whatever.
Way longer than that.
Really?
It's probably nearly 40 years.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I didn't realise. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the reason why they've been producing guitars at such high quality, but have never got to the position of someone like Gibson or someone like, any of those companies. You know, if they've been around that long, which I hadn't appreciated, they've got the heritage there, but they don't have people on the front line, as it were, sort of pushing them, and they're not in the people's focal point.
Well, they've got to do all their own marketing as
absolutely,
well, which is,
Gordon Smith do absolutely no marketing.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's funny though, because it's funny you mention them, because actually yesterday I was looking at a company called Rock and Roll Relics.
Oh yeah.
Which are a similar thing to Gordon Smith, but they're double the price, if not triple the price. Same type of guitar.
So Gordon Smith, I really like Gordon Smith, but I don't think they have that real custom shop feel to them.
Oh, really?
I think they feel like a guitar that is exactly what they're priced at.
Yeah,
I don't think you're getting a bargain with a Gordon Smith.
Okay.
I think you're buying a guitar that's just right for the money they are.
Yeah,
they are
very good. They're proper players' guitars.
Yeah, I mean, they're what, $700 or $800 now, or something like that?
I'm not
sure. Yeah,
they
are, yeah.
Are they? Okay.
I'm just having a look, actually.
They're just right for that money, whereas I've seen the Rock and Roll Relic stuff in the flesh, actually. I saw it when I was at NAMM, and it is, like, custom shop good. It's like... And the thing, they focus a lot on, like, Les Paul Juniors, which I guess, like, Gibson don't focus on so much. And they're really good. They're really, really nice. And what are they, like $1,500, something like that? So
I think they do it. I saw there's I think World Guitars have a SG Junior in TV Yellow, which is like $1,799, and it's relic'd. I mean, it looks pretty class.
Yeah, I think they're a real cool brand, and they do loads of stuff on Instagram and stuff. Like they seem to be kind of at the forefront of the social thing. So. Yeah, check out Rock and Roll Relic.
What does it say on the headstock?
I wish the... Yeah, because that
says,
is a terrible name.
I think
name.
It says Rock and Roll Relic.
This is exactly why I wouldn't buy a bass collection bass, even though they made some of the best Fender copies for a while.
What, those little cheap ones?
No, they were good.
They made those cool Ricky copies as well.
Oh, yeah, they did.
They made some really cool Ricky.
Yeah, the Ricky ones were actually all right. See, everything Bass Collection did was great, except for the weird bubble font that said Bass Collection London. Yeah.
It wasn't bubbles. They were made out of thumbs.
Oh,
it was the same way
God.
That the Bass Center logo used to be. It was like,
who was in charge of that?
Yeah, it was the 80s, basically, I think, was when Bass Center started.
That's the problem is, I'm fine with being called, a little bit... of a, what's the word?
Traditionalist?
Gear snob?
I guess so, but like Rock and Roll Relics. You want that
it's
on
not
the
a great name.
It's,
no.
it's not a great no. name. Like, yeah. they should make a brand out of it. That's not a brand. What that is, it sounds like a shop service.
That sounds like a shop.
It's a description of what they do. It's not a brand.
You'd be surprised how big the company actually is. Like,
oh no, I'm
I know
sure
the
they
name,
are.
The name is really
incorrect.
Bad, but people don't mind it. People are really, really into their stuff.
Cool.
But you'd have to be into it despite the name. Whereas,
if you
just have a decent name, then it's not a problem.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like Gordon Smith and Harley Benton and stuff like that. You know, it's not like you're not playing, it's not super, super high quality. Sure. It's not super like top end, but they're still decent guitars.
Sure, but at the same time, there are a lot of custom builders out there that are just a person's name, and yeah. like I don't remember any of them.
But
whereas
Nash.
I remember yeah, Rock Nash. And Roll Relics.
I really think we should go to that Holy Grail guitar show in Germany. Because
yeah, okay.
some of the crazy stuff there, like there, I mean, there's like so many weird brands and like just crazy guitar shapes and stuff like
we'll
that.
We'll see what
I
we
mean.
Can do.
I booked my tour plus extras to go to the Fender Visitor Centre.
Oh, nice.
In 2 weeks. 2 weeks? Yeah, something like that.
Interesting. So you're going to get us loads of photos and good stuff?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm doing. I'm going there, so I get to go on the tour and then I get to do some like special separate from the tour stuff afterwards.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to do that. I'm hoping that there'll be some really cool stuff that I can actually take. I'm really hoping there's going to be a Sean Hurley. There's a new, for 2016, a new Sean Hurley custom shop signature precision bass in aged, I'll tell you in a minute, in aged charcoal frost, which is the best colour Fender have ever done.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Yeah, aged charcoal frost. I'm so into
it. No, it's not.
So, Sean Hurley.
A bit white.
Sunset orange transparent.
Aged charcoal frost. So, Sean Hurley is the bass player for some fella. what's that fella who's always got a celebrity girlfriend?
John Mayer.
Yes. There you go.
Okay.
He's the bass player for John Mayer.
Got that from that.
yeah, and he's a great bass player, and basically he plays his dad's 61P bass, and it's the same bass he's always played. And it's just a 61P bass, Sunburst, Torque Guard, Rosewood Neck, and he's had a Jaguar mute kit fitted just above the bridge, so
right.
he can flip up
rendering the
it.
Guitar completely worthless.
Well, evidently not in this case.
Well, yeah.
And he strings with flats, so it's like the coolest, deadest, like jazziest sound.
Are you going to come back from America with a bass?
I'm going to try to, yeah. And so they've made like a Fender Custom Shop version of exactly that.
Yeah.
Which is great, and I've always been like, that is the coolest custom shop bass I've ever seen. But even though I buy all my guitars in Sunburst, I think if I was going to go custom shop, I probably wouldn't want Sunburst. So the fact that they released it in the only colour that Fender do that's better than Sunburst, aged charcoal,
you're ridiculous,
frost. So I'm so excited.
Couple of bits of news from me this week. First up, the Maleco Charlie Foxtrot finally turned up, and it is the maddest pedal I've ever
Sweet
heard.
Sweet Moses.
Me and Branton were playing with it a little bit earlier before we started podcasting.
It's like a rainbow machine, but maybe weirder.
Do you think it's weirder than the Count to Five? Does it do a similar thing?
Yes.
Because was this the yes. one we were talking about where the guy, the original demo was the guy from the Dandy Warhols?
It's a signature model Same for one? Him.
Right, okay.
So they call it a, I think they call it a granular delay sampler. So basically, it doesn't do loops. What it's doing is, like, it's got a triggered input, like a threshold connected input, that when you strike a note or a chord above that threshold, it will repeat that like a delay, but it doesn't fade off like a delay. There's no, like, release time. It just, like, it just plays the same note again in an interval that you've specified for an amount of times that you've specified. But it will also do randomized pitch on that as well. And the pitch can be like seemingly like two octaves down, or maybe even further. It could be like three octaves down. And it will either just jump to that pitch, or it can glide between two pitches. But it also, if you hit a chord,
none of that's controllable.
No, none of this is controllable. It does it completely at random, it seems.
That's quite cool.
And so if you hit a chord and it's doing the repeats, you can then hit another chord and it instantly stops that dead and starts doing a fresh set of repeats. It's one of the weirdest pedals I've ever experienced.
That's quite cool. I suppose it's taking, I mean, you know, pedals like the old DD3, which had like a hold mode, which sampled like 2 seconds.
Yep.
They gave you like real stuttered repeats with no fade. I suppose it's taking that idea and then just like completely adding a load of other parameters to that sound.
I would say it's like that hold mode, or, you know, like a freeze or something like that mixed with the rainbow machine.
Yeah,
it's doing like weird, like random pitch trails and things like that. It's absolutely
so
bonkers.
So you know, I think the controls, you've got like size and obviously like preamp. So I'm assuming you can add drive in as
you
well,
can.
And then
there's,
you can control how long the capture amount is.
Yes. So basically the two top left controls, which are size and duration, are like delay length and feedback. Then the one on the top right is your pitch randomizer. And I haven't quite figured out how that works yet, because we only just got this out of the box earlier to have a play. Then you've got your preamp control, then your mix control, and with it all the way up, obviously you just hear the madness going on. And then the last one is, I can't remember, there's another control
on
there.
Threshold?
The threshold, yeah, of course, yeah. So it's just a real bonkers pedal.
They've always made some, like, some really awesome pedals, and obviously they now make a load of synth stuff, including the System 500 for Roland. Which is pretty amazing, really, the fact that Roland have asked them to build all their synthesizer models.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge jump for the company, basically.
Because they've been around for a long time, and they actually made mini pedals, I think, way before mini pedals actually really took off.
I remember you having some Maleco like mini stuff on your board a long time ago.
And they also did, and actually they still do make it. They make a lo-fi analog delay, which is like an analog delay with like a ring modulator built in.
Yeah. Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
It's, I don't know why I didn't know about this company. They do a lot of cool stuff. And again, yeah, like Matt says, like loads of it's like, is like lo-fi stuff. And if you want, you know, if people have been getting into like the Chase Bliss stuff and Earthquaker and all this kind of more weird stuff, Maleco do some really cool options at not ridiculous money.
Definitely a company on the up.
Yes. So one last bit of news, an apology, if you will, before we dive into the news.
No apologies.
Last week we may have played the intro music twice.
May have.
We definitely played the intro music twice.
I at first, when I was listening back, I thought it was deliberate because like it came in at a point when Jay was going off on one so about something that had nothing to do with guitars. You were going off on one about synthesizers, and then the music just came in for the whole time that you were talking and came back to us talking exactly when we'd sort of finished. I thought it was deliberate.
Maybe I'll just do that. Or maybe like every time your mic's on, Brandon, or I'll just put a noise gate in that automatically plays the thing.
How can you put like a gated volume?
Yeah, so everything else ducks out, the music comes back in, and then when Brandon's finished talking.
No, maybe if there's just like enough sustained volume that goes into Joe's mic after a period of time, it just starts to
drops off.
Mind that in the editing of this podcast, you essentially have to put music at the start and the end, and
so,
that's it. How did you manage to mess up the 5 minutes that you need to spend in Pro Tools to do
my
this?
My computer is not very good, always struggling these days, and I think I tried to copy the intro music to the end, and I may have copied it twice by accident and left one of the copies about 5 minutes from the beginning of the podcast. So yeah, sorry about that. We'll try not to do it again this week, but who knows, I might just put the music over this whole bit. That'd be quite funny. Anyway, should we dive in some news?
Nubian.
So have announced the dual boost. Matty, tell us about it.
So basically a sort of redesign and a take on one of their other boosts, but the cool thing about all the Sur pedals is dual options but only one foot switch. So you hold down the center foot switch and it goes to a second boost.
Okay.
And because it's a super transparent clean boost, you can basically set it up one something you might leave on all the time to kind of make everything sound a bit nicer, a bit warmer. And then when you've got drive on, you want an extra volume boost, you just hold down the foot switch and it goes to the second boost, press it again, and it goes back to the original boost. So it's quite cool. You've got two high cut modes on there as well, so you can take out some of the top end. And then it basically gives you either up to 10 or up to 20 dB. So quite a cool little
Sur product, isn't it?
That is exactly what I was going to say. So my issue...
You're going to complain that it's very boring.
Well, not that it's very boring. Yeah. It's not that it's boring.
It's so sessioned, isn't it? It's so like 80s shredder.
My issue with Sur has always been that everything is just a little bit too clinical.
Yeah.
You know, even like the Sur Riot, which is the pedal that everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, like it's just a little too clinical. That said, clinical is exactly what you want for something that's going to be a clean boost.
Yeah.
So this seems like a perfect pedal for Sur to produce. Do you know
just
what I mean?
It seems like a boost with a treble cut. I was like, oh, you're taking all the fun out of a clean boost.
You've got to just wind some of that top back. So things don't get too exciting. Oh, you know? Yeah.
Think about it like when you had that terrible
you want it to sound
top
edgy.
Knot, Joe. Just yeah. wind that top oh, back in.
God. Oh, God, I forgot you had a top yeah. knot.
Not only did I have a top knot, I did some demo videos. of some basses when I had that top knot.
Yeah. And, do you still get grief about it in the comments?
Every morning when the chap who I work with who runs the YouTube, when he turns up and he logs in, he checks the comments. Like, just every now and again, there is a sort of like a great bass, awful haircut. I know. It was
sorry,
a bad
we've
time.
All had them.
I mean, we did tell you at the time.
Yeah, I know you did. Again, everyone told me. Everyone
like 6 months delay.
So
like...
oh, so recently I did a demo video for the new Boss bass compressor, and I was like, I was really chuffed with it. Actually, I was really happy with the video and really happy with the pedal. And I was kind of like, I'm terrible at playing in these things. I can't play bass without like a drum kit along with me, and I'm fully aware of that. And also without like a whole pedal board of stuff, I just find it difficult, and I never sound very good, but I was like, oh, I think I've done an all right job. All the comments are positive. I've got no thumbs down, and YouTube is a horrible place to upload a demo because people who comment on YouTube 9 times out of 10
Matt's ones are usually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to say.
Actually,
you got a nice one.
You got a nice one today, which I'll tell you in a minute. But yeah, I was like, all my comments were good on this video until this morning. Sort of logged in, checked it. Top comment on there was like, why does this company always get crap bass players to play?
I did some bass demos.
I know you did. Well, they probably hadn't watched yours. It's probably all mine. But yeah, Matt, you got one today on a really, really old video that just said, wow, he's lost weight since.
That is good.
That is correct.
That is correct.
How about that?
Indeed. So, Joe Branton, some slightly more exciting news. It's not quite a clean boost. Babbage have introduced some bridges, some brand new bridges.
Yes, they have, which is great. I mean, I really liked the Babbage. I think, to be honest, they weren't on my radar at all until they appeared on the Gib.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An EB bass in 2013.
Oh, they did. You're right.
Now, I great understood bass. That it was a great bass. A real shame that they discontinued it after only 2 years of running the bass. But I understand now that they were a sort of relatively big hardware company before that. But they'd never crossed my path. So they made a really interesting, really huge high mass bridge with a really interesting saddle setup. For the EB bass, and actually Gibson in 2015 adopted it onto all their standard models, including the basses, including the SG bass and the Thunderbird, making it the first ever bridge change that Gibson had made on the Thunderbird, which is bonkers.
Really?
Like, yeah, that's
well,
like,
so even on like the it was the same bridge on the like the studio.
Yeah, that's
models.
Right. Always have been the same, the simple wraparound bridge, and it was the same on the SG. Although the SG, because it's had some modern incarnations,
yeah,
throughout the years has had some other stuff on it as well. Has
is
had a Leo quad on it, and
on like the Epiphone Thunderbird 4, or is it just on the,
yeah, really? Always right. The same, always just a simple wraparound, right, as okay. far as I'm aware, and I'm pretty sure it is. So this was the first change, and I mean, I thought they looked terrible on the 2015 Gibson series, but mainly because they're so modern, and they're also so big, but they're so deep.
yeah,
as well. Like even the Leo Chord ones, at least they're a normal depth. They're just sort of large.
Chunky. Yeah.
These ones, because of the way the saddles work, which is kind of like a semicircular disc that the string rests across, rather than it having any straight angles to go across, because that kind of affects how the sustain runs from the strings into the wood of the body. So they have these semicircular saddles for the string to glide across. Because of those, that comes so far out of the body that they are really substantial. But yes, basically Babbage have just released a new line that a kind of
the Z series,
yeah, which just are kind of extensions of or variants of the sort of Babbage style of bridge that they've been making, you know, for some years. But a real cool alternative to a Leo Quad if you were thinking about upgrading your sort of four or five string. I didn't see any six strings in the...
Not yet, no. I mean, not a huge market.
No.
So, one last bit of news this week. Charvel have announced some brand new San Dimas and SoCal guitars. Matt, this sounds like something that you'll probably know about.
Yeah, well, I mean, the most important thing to know about this guitar range is the fact that they do it in neon pink.
Yes. I didn't know that, and now what? I'm very happy.
Yeah.
I love so these guitars.
And I know, actually, it's funny, really. I think it's one of those things where, I mean, they're obviously at the height of popularity in the kind of 80s, because they were that sort of super strat, sort of shred guitar, that is sort of making a bit of a comeback, because people want a super strat. They don't necessarily want maybe like an Ibanez or anything like that, but they want the range of sounds that you're going to get from having humbuckers and the option to coil tap. So you've got the SoCal body shape and the San Dimas, which are very, very similar. There's only slight differences between the two. Both come in dual humbuckers, both come with either Floyd Rose or hardtail, and coil tappable humbuckers. But it's quite nice, because I think they do things like they do like a white San Dimas with like Zebra Seymour Duncans that you can then basically split into single coils. So you get a good range of like strat sounds, you get a good range of sort of humbucker sounds, good for kind of shred players. Or someone who just doesn't want to play a strat. I think that's the thing, is there are people out there who may be looking at something like the Elite but don't want something with Fender on the headstock, basically.
So what are my options if I want to get a neon pink Charvel?
So neon pink, they do the San Dimas, the SoCal style, and I think they do it in a hardtail and a Floyd Rose.
Okay.
Super strat, JB humbuckers, maple neck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of all you want, really.
Scratch plate, and no scratch plate.
Scratch plate. So the SoCals have, like, they're basically, like, you know, modded strats, basically.
Okay.
Have the modern neck adjustment for truss rod at the bottom, which is quite a nice feature. Black scratch plate, and, yeah, neon pink.
That sounds awesome. Do we know what sort of money they're going to be?
680 for that. So actually, like sub 700, you're looking at the sort of like American special sort of money.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I mean, there isn't a lot else on the market. If you're looking to spend that sort of money and you're looking at maybe a Fender, but you don't want something with single coils and you want something that's maybe sort of more down the sort of rock or even metal market, you're looking at Ibanez. And to be honest, things like the RGs aren't the same sort of guitar. They're very, very different. And these have a compound radius that go all the way to 16 at the top end. So they're actually flatter. Yeah, they're actually a flatter radius than most Ibanez. So they start at 12 and then they go
they
all the
start
way
at 12?
Yeah, and they're right, also okay. 25 and a half inch scale.
All right, okay.
It's nice. So yeah, they're good. Jumbo frets, so they work really well if you want to put big, thick strings on them as well.
That sounds like, in terms of spec, that sounds really good. Really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what a lot of people would want from a, like I say, like a strat, but necessarily not using it for maybe a more traditional strat sound, for example, or, you know, what you'd expect a strat player to play, for example. You know, by having jumbo frets on there and a hardtail just means that, you know, 11s or, you know, even 12s are going to feel really nice on there, and you're still going to be able to get a really low action. So
I've got a question. What's happening with Jackson? Do we know? Because I didn't see any new stuff from Jackson at NAMM. I haven't heard of a new Jackson model for a long time. And it seems that Charvel have kind of come in and You know, obviously they're both overseen by Fender. Charvel have kind of come in and done loads of new models and done loads of new cool stuff. Have we heard anything about Jackson in a while?
I think there are some new Jacksons, but I think only in terms of like what they already do.
Yeah, they did release some new stuff for NAMM.
Okay,
but it was all custom shop stuff.
Okay,
and it was all crazy airbrushed, pointy stuff. So okay. Nothing. Yeah,
well, because the exactly guy that does the Jackson custom shop is the same guy who's been, I think, been doing the custom shop like since the beginning.
Okay.
But yeah, actually, I was just having a quick look on their website. I think they're doing a couple more of the Kelly ranges with that are on the cheaper side of things, and also something called the Monarch, which is like a Les Paul but with a Jackson headstock.
Okay.
Looks very weird.
I need to check that out.
I'm quite into that.
Yeah, I need to have a look at that.
We've got some new signature models.
Who have we got? Which players are we not going to be able to name?
Christian Andriau.
Okay, don't know
who
that is.
He plays with French metal act Gojira or Gojira or
Gojira.
Gojira.
Gojira. Gojira. Yeah,
Japanese for Godzilla.
Yeah, Chris Broderick. Who plays in Act of Defiance.
Oh yeah, sweet, I love them. Preferred their earlier
David
stuff.
David Ellefson.
Ellefson, yeah.
Ellefson.
He's been an endorsee for quite a while.
Signature 4-string, 5-string. Misha Mansur, obviously, I think they've done, I think, if I remember rightly, they're doing a cheaper version in satin black, actually, which is quite a big thing because the Juggernaut is actually, even for someone like me who's not really into periphery, the 6-string was actually a really nice guitar, but at $3,000, like, you know, looks amazing. But I think I've got a feeling that actually this satin black one's going to be like the £800-900 mark.
Cool.
Not confirmed on that, but I'm sure I heard someone mentioning it at work the other day that there might be a cheaper one. So
nice. Well, Matt, maybe we're talking about doing this brand spotlight on the podcast. Maybe you could do a bit of research on Jackson and come back to us in a couple of weeks with a.
I'll learn how to gent, and then, you know,
yeah,
I can demo it.
Definitely, correctly. Definitely. Should we do some questions?
Wait, I've got a little bit more news.
Okay, what's this breaking news?
Well, this breaking news is that S&K Pedals. Have a very small pedal company have released their first limited run of VHD distortion pedals.
Okay.
Do you remember the Ampeg VH amplifiers from the 90s?
No.
They were a solid state guitar amp.
Okay.
Made in the 90s. According to S&K Pedals, really defined hardcore and death metal in the 90s. I don't know anything about these amps, but I'm kind of into the idea, and certainly that was like a prime time for guitarists in heavier genres moving to sort of solid state amplifiers.
Yeah.
So they have, these amps obviously have long since been discontinued, so S&K Pedals have taken the distortion channel from the VH amps, variable harmonic amps by Ampeg, and have put them into pedals, and they are making 5 of these pedals at $200 a pop.
Wow. Okay.
And I watched the demo, and it's one of the most amazing sounding distortions I've ever heard.
Are you going to buy one of these?
I'm not going to get one, not for myself, but I don't think I'm doomy enough to require this.
I think you're quite doomy.
It's, yeah, you would. You play pop music. But these pedals are, it is the coolest sounding distortion I've heard
it
in
looks
a long
great.
Time. So, well, I mean, it's a black box that looks like someone's Tippex the logo on.
It looks like an old Ampeg. Like.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, look, that really does look like they've Tippexed on the logo.
It's not the greatest decal.
No, but I'll share it on the group, snkpedals.bigcartel.com, and you can have a look and watch the demo and everything. What are you going
to
say, Matt?
I forgot to mention, Mark, before you went on, actually, when we were talking about the Charlie Foxtrot, Catlin Bread, I think I mentioned it when we were talking about text, have done a new pedal which is basically based on an 80s, it's a delay pedal, it's based on an 80s Walkman, so the delay, it's like, you know when you used to have like an old Walkman CD player and it used to skip, the CD used to skip, basically they've taken that idea and then built it into a delay pedal.
What?
So it like randomly skips when you're like So you get like delay, but then it like randomly jumps. So if you're, there's no way to really control when it jumps either.
So if you're playing guitar in the back of your parents' car driving to Chessington and you're playing a bit of, like, I don't know, Michael Jackson or something, you go over a bump and then the delay will skip. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay,
that is basically
cool. I'm into it in a big way. Good stuff. So should we do some questions?
Questionable intentions.
First up, Will says, my made in Mexico telly weighs a ton and it gives me shoulder ache. Is this normal or does it vary a lot? J Cross.
Yes and yes. Yes, it is relatively normal, but yes, it does vary a lot.
So why would it vary?
This is a difficult thing to say without sort of sounding like I'm being a little bit dismissive, but...
Bit of a gear snob.
Yeah, I mean, in general, the reason that it varies is because the wood is cheaper.
They're not very good is the reason.
It's not that they're not very good, because, you know, this may well be a Baja. I've played Bajas that are super heavy and I've played Bajas that are super light.
Mexican standards aren't very good. Vintage reissues and the Classic Player series are great.
I've never been a huge fan of Mexican standard Telecasters. Personally, I would rather have a top-end Squire than a Mexican standard Telecaster. But this isn't about us, Joe.
All right.
The thing about it is that one of the ways that they keep the price down with guitars that are built in Mexico is they use materials that aren't as high grade. And so if you pick up an American standard Telecaster, generally they'll probably all be around about the same weight.
Yeah.
They'll probably all look pretty good and pretty similar. Whereas if you pick up a Mexican standard, even a Baja or even, you know, one of the reissues, so like, you know, the 72 or the 60s, they sometimes might just get a really heavy one. And I'm actually not that bothered about that. I think it's cool. I like a heavy guitar, but it's just something that you've got to deal with and you've got to sort of be aware of when you purchase it, I guess, to a certain degree. You know, maybe just get a thicker padded strap. I think
really they're quite a dangerous guitar, I think, to buy online, the made in Mexico standard series.
Yeah, I mean, there's some excellent ones, definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's just there's a lot of variation.
Yeah, you need to
try it before I buy.
But even if you've got a heavy one, you know, it might be that the guitar plays really great and sounds really nice.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, I really like heavy guitars.
My Les Paul weighs a ton.
I think my Les Paul weighs a ton, and I absolutely love it for that. I don't think my telly's the lightest either. So, you know, it's just one of those things. Sometimes you get heavy ones and you either need to... You just need to get, like, a thicker strap or, you know... Well, that's sort of the only thing to do, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Actually, quite an interesting thing that Juan Aldrete did for his 70s P-bass, because he was playing... He has like a 70 and it weighs a ton. And at this particular time, he's playing like 2.5 hour sets. So he had a second strap lock fitted. Where was it?
Oh,
it was behind the lower horn.
So he could wear it like a belt.
Yeah, so he has one strap going over his shoulder and then a second one that he wears as a belt.
Yeah,
There is actually a guitar strap that goes like a saxophone strap that loops over the neck. And
Jack
then
White
has
played
two
one
bits.
For a while, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, I think Planet Waves did it, and it was supposed to be a strap for people who have heavy guitars.
They did, I love that idea.
Or you could buy the Squid. What about the Squid?
The Squid. Well, the Squid was something that was really cool, and I say really cool. It's really cool if you're into guitar accessories like I am. It was something that Planet Waves only seemed to do for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they discontinued. It was this really intense, strip of sort of rubberized plastic that you could, that had a slot in it that would allow you to slide your guitar strap through. And then it's like, you know, you get that plastic material that you're supposed to put on, like, the dashboard of your car to stop, like, paper and keys flying around.
Right.
It was made of like that, and they looked like squid suckers.
Right.
So that when you put it on your shoulder, it would like sort of, it would go like this, and it would like stick to you, but without any adhesive.
It was like loads of padding for your shoulder, basically.
Yeah.
But it was a cool thing that you could attach to your guitar strap.
Oh my god!
You need to look into the squid.
It was really cool.
This sounds awful.
You need to get a squid.
It was cool. I was once working in the shop, and a customer came in and went, "Oh, wow! I've got a really really heavy guitar. I've got a couple of really really heavy guitars, and like they give me like really bad shoulder ache. This is exactly what I want. This is going to change my life. This is perfect. Can I have two?" And I went, "Oh no, I'm really sorry. They appear to have discontinued. They've only got that one, but you know, you can take that." And he went, "Oh, don't worry about it."
Oh.
That was it. I felt like I'd really like broken his heart because I couldn't get him two. Just one.
When's your birthday, Joe? It's June, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. David says, "I think I'm totally sold on a Fender Bassbreaker 212 30-watt combo for under £550. Sounds like a great deal to me. Have any of you tried one? Matt Knight."
No.
Okay. Good to know.
I haven't actually landed.
Yeah. Okay. Nowhere in the UK.
I was actually going to have a look and see. I think they're due April. I might be wrong, but... So yeah, I think like early to mid-April.
Yeah, I believe it's the sort of the ones that are look a bit sort of the cool one, the 7-watt one, is due late.
Okay,
because I have looked into it.
Interesting.
I've looked into maybe
I think they're all due. I think all of them are due around April.
I believe the 7-watt combo, which is one that I really am quite interested in, is quite a bit later than that, from what I understand. Although that might just be because all the pre-orders have gone immediately. I'm not sure.
Jeremy says, "I play bass in a band and recently picked up a Big Muff bass pedal. As soon as I stomp it, I can barely hear myself. I've lost all my mids and there's little percussive thump. I've heard of people boosting signal with other pedals. Would an overdrive work? I set the Muff just so it's just fuzzy and not full crunchy. Joe Branton."
Well, if it's the guitar version of the Big Muff...
He does say Big Muff bass pedal.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. You weren't listening where you were eating a crisp.
I was eating a crisp. Away from the mic, though. Consider it that. Well, that's certainly strange. The Big Muff Pi for bass is, I think we've all probably said, is probably the best value for money drive pedal you can get, because it's £50. And really, I think, you know, the next closest good drive pedal is probably about £150. So for bass, that is. So I've got a lot of time for them. But that said, yeah, I can see how in certain situations it still squashes your tone a little bit. Certainly nothing in comparison to the guitar version of the Big Muff. A lot of bass players used to use that, and yeah, we used to counter it with having like an octave or after it in the chain to try and reattach some of that low end that it squashed. I actually only sort of glance read this, and I just assumed it was going to be a guitar one. I was going to say, well, that's why it's squashing you out the mix.
Yeah.
But it is quite unusual for it to do it with a bass pedal. Maybe it's something to do with your tone. I would suggest that you probably need something that's got a blend function on it in that case. So I would say either run the pedal in some sort of like ABY format, so you're getting your clean signal through at the same time, or maybe think about getting something like the Big Muff Bass Pi Deluxe, which allows you to blend between your clean signal and your drive signal. But yes, it can sometimes over squash, but not usually enough for it to dip out of a mix. Have you ever experienced that, Mark?
I just don't really like drive on bass in general. I think I think a lot of pedals out there do exactly what Jeremy is saying here, in that you just lose what I really like about bass, which is the kind of thump and the kind of thickness of the tone.
I completely agree. You
lose a lot of that when you put drives in there. And certainly some are better than others, definitely. And the Bass Big Muff is pretty good. The best one I think I've heard, I mean, it's not a fuzz, but I really like the BB1X.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, that is actually it. And that's what I've done even before the BB1X, is I don't use bass drive pedals to drive bass.
Yeah.
I use bass preamps. because you need an EQ on there. I know the Big Muff Pi has one. It has an overall tone control, but you need an active EQ. You need bass, middle, and treb, so you can kind of sort out.
Did you just say trebs?
Trebs, yeah.
Bass, middle, and trebs.
Yeah, that's fly.
Good.
That's the swage way of saying.
Okay,
it.
Right. Good. Glad you're bringing in these youth street terms to the podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I hear the kids are really into the trebs.
Yeah, that's true.
Dennis says, what's the youngest age you'd recommend a kid to start on guitar? Matt Knight, when you're dealing with people in store and people say, is my kid old enough to start on guitar, what do you recommend?
It's tricky, really, because I'd say, you know, most people probably start about 8 or 9, because I think now it's becoming more of an option for kids to play in sort of primary school, and I think there's a lot more teachers doing lessons from schools. But classical guitar is probably the place where most people would start, because they come in smaller sizes. I think the difficulty with electric is a lot of kids want to play electric because it kind of makes a louder and probably more cool noise.
It's definitely much cooler.
It is. I mean, but the thing is that, you know, it's not a viable option for a company to make a lot of different sizes. You know, I think you've pretty much got the Squire Mini, which is probably one of the only ones. I know Stag make one, but apart from that, you know, Gibson aren't really going to make a 3/4 size guitar, because it's just not going to be, they're just not going to sell enough.
I mean, it's not just that. I mean, Gibson, well, Epiphone do make a
they make the Pee-wee, don't they?
The Les Paul Express, I think it's called. Yeah.
Pee-wee Express.
I don't really think it's to do with sort of how viable it is to make it. It's more just to do with the fact that guitars are the size that they are for a reason.
Hmm.
And once you start, you know, that's why, you know, you can have huge like sort of changes in playability between, for example, like a Mustang, which is, you know, 24-inch scale, and a Strat, which is 25.5-inch scale. You know, that's only another inch and a half. And they sound completely different, and you have to have them set up completely different, and you almost have to have them with different strings because of it.
You actually raise a really interesting point, and something I think that we deal with more on bass than you guys do on guitar, but that definitely still applies, that I think that Mark's probably dealt with and I have, is that a lot of the time new starters come in and their parents ask if they should start them on a short scale bass.
Mm.
And I mean, I don't know what you said. I always used to, unless the child was really young, I used to say no, because ultimately they're going to struggle on it for the first year or two.
Yeah.
But then they're going to, I mean, not, you know, there's nothing wrong with short scale basses. They're great, but 9 out of 10 bass players plays a full scale bass. So they're going to want to move on to it at some point, and then there's going to be a massive amount of relearning, going a massive amount of like muscle memory that's just
gone
to waste.
It's a shame they don't make the Bullet anymore, because they used to do a small bass, didn't they? Was it the Bullet? No, the Bronco.
Yeah.
No, there are loads of short scale basses you can get. To be honest, the most affordable small short scale bass on the market is the Epiphone EBO, which I think is about £150 for like a mahogany bass with a, you know, a mud bucket neck pickup in an SG shape. That is pretty cool.
Still massively neck heavy though, which doesn't really help any starters. So my advice would be, like, get to a guitar shop and try the child holding a guitar, basically, or bass.
Yeah, that's always the thing to do.
If they can reach all the way down to the first fret, and if they can reach an F on the first fret, then that basically, I would say that guitar is kind of the right size. But I mean, my advice usually was like, if they're over 9 or 10, they could probably deal with a full size guitar, depending on how big they are. Under that, probably get them a 3/4 or a short scale. Seems to be a kind of good rule of thumb. And if they're any younger than 6 or 7, maybe like try a little ukulele.
Definitely, yeah.
There's no point starting them on guitar at that point. They'll just really struggle.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, unfortunately, it's when you're starting out, when you're really starting out for the very, very first time, it's just hard. It's just difficult.
Yeah.
It's just difficult, and there's sort of no way of getting around the fact that your fingers are going to hurt from pressing down, and you're going to struggle to, you know, be able to stretch to play a C chord, for example, or hold a bar chord. And it's just one of those things. But my sort of top tip when talking to people who are buying guitars for sort of younger kids, was if you want to go for a short scale, for like the Squire Mini, for example, just make sure that you, the thing to do is to tune the guitar up. That's what I always found anyway. Rather than have the guitar up a fifth, actually. So rather than have it tuned to E, tune everything to A.
Yeah.
Because that tends to sort of sort out the tension a little bit. The chord shapes remain the same. I mean, the difficult thing will be, of course, that if you're trying to teach your kid...
what you play will be different to what they're playing.
Or you'll have to cap on the fifth fret. Yeah. But, you know, it's just... It's a good sort of workaround for a relatively unworkable situation. But yeah, the other thing is you kind of need to use heavier strings. And the problem with doing that is that you're using heavier strings, but the reason that you're tuning up is because it's for someone who's small, so they're probably not able to push down on the lighter strings, let alone the heavier strings. So it's, you know, the long and the short of it is it's difficult when you're starting out.
Yeah.
And if your kid is getting into playing guitar, they will roll with it if they want to do it. And, you know, it's just something that you sort of have to stick out to a certain degree.
The other thing I would say is, like, don't push them to start too early. Like, Matt, when did you start playing guitar?
I started when I was 15, actually.
Jay Cross?
I think I was 12.
Joe Branton?
Yeah, about 14, I think.
Yeah, so I would say that, like, we've kind of all done all right. Like, we're not the best guitarists in the world, but no. We can play a bit, and, you know, we do this podcast, and we've worked in retail and things like that, and kind of lives have revolved around guitar to some extent. And, like, none of us... I didn't start till I was 15, maybe even 16. I think 15. It's fine. Like, don't push kids into it at like 7, because they might just be put off for life because they can't. It's quite hard to play a guitar at that age.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're still growing.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let us know how they get on. Really want to know, Dennis, like how you get on with lessons and stuff like that. We're about up at time, gentlemen. We've got plenty more questions.
Time at the bar.
Indeed, which we shall answer over in the Patreon podcast, patreon.com/guitar nerds. We've got questions from Adam talking about compact pedal board setups. We've got questions from Joe about the Eric Johnson Strat.
Yes.
Question from Mike about heavy Les Pauls. Question from Josh about pedal train pedal boards. What else are we going to do? Let's do... Question from Matt about Line 6 M5, and a question from David about feedback pedals. All answered over in the Patreon. We're from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. Or from $10 a month, you get to be one of our executive producers. Just like these people, you'll have your name read out on the show. We've only got 4 spots left, so if you're thinking about doing it, jump in now.
Andy McKenzie, Joe Dapatow, Eric Sorry, Pal Cregan, Jack Griffey, Dal Rassaroo, Jock Connor, Will Club, Chris Walson, Scott O'Brien, Matt Kwan, Flash Fortune, Phil Tublot, Laurie Onukola, Mog Grafekinol, Colandero, and Pacalote Dustimau.
Thanks, Colin Anderson, for your donation. Sorry that your name was perhaps not quite read out correctly. Thanks very much for submitting your questions this week. If you want to submit questions, do join the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Or you can send them to us on Twitter @guitar nerds. Join us on Instagram @guitar nerds or on YouTube where we are Guitar Nerds Videos. Also on Periscope @guitar nerds. Or you can tweet us individually. Me @mark_random. Matt is Matt_90, Jay is JAYBM1, and Joe is Joseph_900.
That's it.
Thanks for joining us this week, and if we don't see you in the Patreon, we'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye. Farewell, bye. Homies.